I'm Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Thank you for clicking on and tuning in, or whatever it is you do there. Back for another hour of whatever this is. And we're going to start right off here with... I like to share some things from my private life, as you, if you, as you can tell from the first three episodes of the podcast. Must thank Mr. Robert Feeder of the Chicago Tribune for some nice mentions about the podcast, and hopefully you have heard about it before that. But if not, if you read it there, hopefully you'll be clicking on. Come to my Facebook page, Jim Toronto. And I'm always talking about what's either on the podcast or other things I'm doing. I also have a daily feature which on my Facebook page, which I've been doing now for almost a year. In fact, next week will be exactly a year. I've almost done it almost every day. I don't think there's 365 because I had some computer problems a couple of times, but I've got over 20, I've got almost 24,000 songs on my iPod. Got an iPod Classic. They don't even make those anymore, I don't think, to hold that much. But I've got, I had over almost 4,000 CDs, and I downloaded most of them onto that iPod. It took me about 2 weeks of almost 24 hours a day doing it. So I've got almost 24,000 songs on my iPod. And one day I was listening to my iPod out in the yard, and I was like, wow, I've got some really cool music on here. And there's a lot of songs or a lot of artists that... I bet you a lot of people either haven't heard of or maybe they don't remember them. And granted, you know, these are older groups. I'll admit I might be stuck in the past. I'm sorry. Not a big Meghan Trainor fan. I don't have I can almost say that I don't have any songs on my iPod that say and featuring. So that's how you know how old I am. Because today, almost every song is by somebody and featuring somebody else. I don't think any of the songs on my iPod say and featuring. But there was a lot of music, you know, from the past that that people maybe not have ever heard of, album tracks or some groups that weren't, you know, big hits. And I was listening to what I had on there, and I said, I want to expose this. And so every day on my Facebook page, I've got a feature with a song and a little description. It's called Elton Jim's Jam-Packed iPod. And every day I feature a different song from Elton Jim's Jam-Packed iPod. In fact, I even have my own logo for it, which is pretty cool, with me and my Elton John glasses and two little ear pods coming out of the glasses. It's pretty neat. And every day, like I said, I feature a song, a link to a song, just goes to YouTube, and I give a quick description of what the song was or why it was important or where you can find it or why I like it and something like that, just to give you a little background. And it's an idea to either reacquaint some people with some music from the past or, in some cases, for the younger people, maybe discover some music that you'd never heard of from the past as well. So it's called Elton Jim's Jam-Packed iPod every day on my Facebook page. And as I said, there's other things on there as well, and also news about the podcast and other radio things. And also, I'm excited to say that I'm going to be appearing in a play in Crystal Lake, Illinois, in July. And I know this could be dated, but if you're listening to this beforehand, I'm appearing in a play at the Rao Center for the Arts in Crystal Lake from July 8th through the 31st. So go to WSREP.org, WSREP.org. That's the Williams Street Repertory Theater Company. And for some ticket information, it's a great show. It's called Art. It's just three guys, just me and two other guys. And just started rehearsals. It's kind of fun. And so hopefully you can see me in the flesh. On the boards, as they say. But right now, we are podcasting. Radio for the internet. So as I said, I mentioned the play for a reason, not just as a cheap plug. But I had 2 years ago, I turned 50, And I didn't buy a Corvette. And I didn't get a mistress. And I didn't buy a boat. But I had to have a midlife crisis, right? I mean, you have to do that. So what I did is I dyed my hair blonde. I figured, well, this is mostly harmless. And so it was interesting. It was I have dark hair. And so it was quite a different look, to say the least. But I figured, what the heck? Shake things up a little. I'm Elton Jim. I could pull this off. Some people might not be able to. I think I can pull the. I could pull off the blonde hair. Now, it wasn't a very easy process to go through. I haven't really talked about this on my podcast, but if you come to the podcast having listened to me on the radio and on WGN and other incarnations, if you will, you will know. And I didn't necessarily make a point to say this, but it became a part of the show, so I just went with it. But yes, indeed, I am a member of the Hair Club for Men and have been for quite a while. And so, and it's not a hairpiece, it's a hair system. Just so you know that. We don't call them hairpieces or toupees. Very gauche. They are hair systems. So to dye my hair, this was not just throw some, you know, some hair color in your hair. This was a process, because not only did we have to pick a color for the hair system, if you will, but then when that came in, we then had to match my hair with the hair system. So it's two different things. And, you know, my hair was dark. So apparently, I didn't want like bright orange or bright yellow hair. I just wanted some, you know, a blonde hair. So he picked out some, you know, a color that they would make the system out of. But apparently my original hair was not taking the blonde dye, the blonde color, very well. I don't know what that means. It wound up, I was at this place for 5 hours on one day. They colored my hair like five times. It was burning my head. So, and they still couldn't get it. And I was white like Andy Warhol. Then I went to Billy Idol's Shocking Blonde. Then to tone that down, I wound up orange like Bozo the Clown. I couldn't get the right color. I actually had to come back the next day. And I had to wear a hat because my hair was ridiculous. And I was there another 2 or 3 hours. We finally got a match. And so I had that for about 2 years. Now, what was interesting about that was when I came, and I was still working here at WGN, and I came in with my proud of my new blonde hair, and it was very interesting, the reaction. And I still don't know how to read it. I know some people didn't like it because they basically told me, wow, I really don't like that. So I knew how they felt. But then it was interesting. These are longtime friends, people that I knew ever. Some people didn't say anything, which I thought was interesting, because I'm thinking, well, are they not saying anything because they don't want to say anything bad? Because, I mean, it was a total change in my appearance. And if you've known me for any period of time, it was quite a different look. And a lot of people just never even acknowledged it, which I thought was strange. And, of course, I'm always a half-empty kind of guy. You know how people say the glass is half-empty and half-full? If it's half-full, you're an optimist. If you're half empty, you're a pessimist. Sadly enough, I'm a pessimist. So I always look at things half empty, not half full. So the fact that people were not saying anything at all, not even positive, but nothing at all, I tended to believe that a lot of people didn't care for it. But you know what? I didn't give a damn. I didn't care. My hair is my look, and this is what I want to do, and I liked it. Because I have kind of a a darker look anyway. And so I wanted to lighten things up a little because sometimes I look a little intimidating and a little harsh. And so I thought, well, this will lighten me up a little. So I liked it a lot. And as I said, I had it for 2 years. In fact, almost 2 years right now in June of 2014 is when I dyed it. So I had it. So now I go for an audition for this play that I actually did get cast in. And I went back in April. And they ask you for your resume and for a headshot. Well, the only headshots that I had were all taken when I had dark hair. So I sent that one in to them. And so I guess the director was expecting to see me with dark hair, which makes sense. So I walk into the theater. I get up on the stage, and I'm about to do my monologue for my audition. And before I even say a word, I mean, I've just walked up the stairs onto the stage. I didn't even say hello, good afternoon, nothing. The first words out of the director's mouth when I'm doing my audition is, "Would you dye your hair for this role?" And I was kind of taken aback, and I said, "Well, yeah, I guess." And I was, I said, "Now, is that a personal? I mean, do you not like my hair personally, or do you just think that the character wouldn't have blonde hair?" I didn't want to say that out loud though, because I didn't want to ruin my chances. But her reaction was so fast that I said to myself, she must really not like my blonde hair. Well, hey, I got the role. So, falling into what she had said before, she wanted me to dye my hair dark. So it was not a big deal. I had it for 2 years. And hey, you can always dye it back, right? So just last week, I dyed my hair. And it was so strange. I don't know if you've ever changed your look in some way, whether you did change the color of your hair. Maybe you got a new pair of glasses. Maybe you got something, started to get a new look with your clothes. But your hair, you'd be surprised. Your hair really does change your appearance and change your look and change the impression that people get of you. And it was odd. I mean, I had dark hair for most of my life. And I looked and it was like, wow, who's that guy? It was so strange. And the interesting part of the story is it's only been a week, not even. It's a week today, in fact, that I dyed my hair back to brown after 2 years. And in that week, I have had more people in 2 years. I had nothing positive ever said about my hair, and certainly a few negatives. In a week, and I haven't even gone out that much, I have had, and I've counted, because now I'm writing, I'm like doing that little four lines in the fifth goes diagonally. I've had 11 people in a week, and I'm not standing out on corners, waving to people and say, "Hi, look at me." This is just in casual going around. "Oh, you dyed your hair back. It looks good. In fact, I just came to WGN radio station today and saw someone in the hall. Oh, I like your hair." And I'm like, I don't think that same person who was here 2 years ago, I don't think they said they liked my hair before. And I was like, wow, either I really didn't look good as a blonde and everyone hated it, and I was seeing something completely different in the mirror, because I didn't think it looked that bad. But I dyed my hair back, and now suddenly I'm getting, "Oh, it looks great. Oh, it looks nice. Oh, you dyed your hair back." And so I don't know how to read the situation, because here's the thing. I'm doing the play for I'll have my hair dark now through the end of July. So all of June, all of July. Play ends at the end of July. So now the day of reckoning will come on July 31st. Do I keep the dark hair? Do I go back to the blonde hair? And if I do that, apparently I have to wait because I have to grow out my original hair color to get rid of all the dye and I don't know. It's all these pH balances. I don't know what the heck they're talking about. But then I'm thinking, because now at this point, I mean, I've dyed my hair blonde, so you know, sky's the limit. I'm not going to go crazy. I'm not going to do it blue or purple. But now I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll do like the Anderson Cooper thing. You know, like the white, the gray. So now I don't know. I'm trying to think. You know, that you remember Mad Men? There was that guy John Slattery, who played one of the heads of the advertising firm. And in fact, he's just been on a few episodes of Veep. And he's got that bright white hair. He's been in a lot of things. And I think it looks good on him, and he's an older guy. And I mean, I'm not pretending anymore. You know, if I lie about my age, I'm still old. So I figured, you know, what's the difference? And what I think was interesting, even when I dyed my hair blonde, is everybody say, I mean, some people are like, whoa, where did you go with this? And I'm like, well, you know, okay, so I went proactive on this. But what if somebody what if somebody naturally goes gray? Does somebody get criticized for being gray? They didn't even make the choice there. Their hair turned gray. Some people start turning gray in their 20s, and by the time they're 30, like I said, Anderson Cooper, a perfect example. We've never seen him with dark hair since he's been a media personality. He's always been gray and white, not even salt and pepper. He's had white hair. So now I'm thinking, I've already done it once, right? So what's the difference? So I don't know. So as I said before, with the podcast here, we don't have the ability to communicate immediately. But if you're listening to the podcast, and my picture is up on my Facebook page, please go to my Facebook page, Jim Turano, Turano, and what do you think? Do you think I should stay with the dark hair, or do you think I should go back to the blonde hair? There's some pictures of me up there with blonde hair. Or I'm debating the Anderson Cooper kind of whitish gray look. So I don't know what I'm going to do, but I wouldn't mind some feedback. Because the first time I did the blonde thing, I sort of thought of this on my own and did it on my own. And as I said, I'm not too sure about the reaction. I liked it, and I still might go back to it. At the end of the day, hey, it's my hair, it's my look, I'll do whatever I want. But let's be honest, we all care about what other people think about what we look like. It's vanity. I mean, I'm not afraid to say that. So I might be doing some, so the next time, since this is a presidential election year, I'd like to do some polling on my hair color. So I want to find some focus groups on my hair color. So at least when I go out in public, I'll feel that at least 44% of the population likes it. At least going in, I'll know that either more than 50% or less than 50% like the hair color that I chose. But it's been interesting to see the reactions of people. As I said, I've been really surprised by the fact that I've gotten all these little comments. Oh, you dyed your hair back. First thing they noticed, which is good, because it is a change. But it wasn't just, oh, you dyed your hair back. What I was getting was, oh, you've dyed your hair. And then there's an ellipsis. And I'm waiting for the next sentence. And it just floated. Oh, you dyed your hair. Not good, not bad. Mr. Half Empty took that as an insult. So, let me know. Right now, no blonde, dark hair. And I have to say, just between you and me, I don't know about that blonde having more fun stuff either. I got to say, over 2 years, I had a good time, but I don't know about fun. I don't know if it was much more fun. But once again, maybe if I was 25, I'd have a lot more fun. I don't know. But anyway, if you have any thoughts, Elton Jim needs you to let him know what color his hair should be. And Elton Jim Toronto back here at the Captain Podtastic podcast here at WGN Plus. Thanks for clicking on. I was talking about my hair color, and while we're on vanity, we might as well do a vanity theme here. So I've had some. I've always been very healthy. I didn't even have a doctor, like a regular doctor, until about 5 years ago. Never even saw a doctor. I caught a cold now and then, but very healthy. Always, you know, I never had an eye doctor, never had an ear, never had anything. And then in the last 2 years, I mean, I've been to more doctors in 2 years than I was in my whole life. It's unbelievable. The machine is beginning to show its wear. And long story short, I had a problem with my right eye, and it sounds a lot worse than it is. And there could be a cringe factor here, folks, but it's a podcast. You could click off at any time, or you could stay with me. But you know what? It's a podcast. That's what this is all about. It's the freedom of the radio. So, you know, grab onto something. Hold on. It might be cringe factor, or it might not, but anyway, I had a vein pop in my eye, and I didn't feel it. And apparently, you don't feel it. The only way you know is that your vision gets blurry. According to the retinal specialist, it is a venal occlusion. So I have a venal occlusion, and what happens is that in the middle of your eye, at least from my standpoint, it was blurry sort of when I looked straight ahead, although the top was clear. So there was, and I kept rubbing my eye. What the heck is wrong? So I go to the doctor and he says, yeah, you've got, a vein pop there. And I go, well, how do you know that? I didn't have any pain. He says, no, you won't. It just happens. And the only way you know is if you have this, but we need to take care of this because your retina can swell and that could, you could lose your sight. It's a very serious thing. And I said, well, what do we do? And he says, oh, well, we'll have to give you an injection. And I'm like, well, if I get an injection in my arm, how is that going to affect my eye? And he says, oh, no, you're not getting an injection in your arm. And I said, oh, well, I mean, if I get an injection in my butt, how is that going to affect my eye? He says, no, you're not getting an injection in your butt or your arm. And I said, yeah, where are you going to give me an injection? In my eye? Yes, you're going to get an injection in your eye. Wow. So I figure this is a big thing. I'm going to probably have to come back in 2 weeks and we'll have to do a whole thing. And he says, no, we're going to do it right now. And I'm like, no, I just came here for an eye check. Yeah, you know, I'll take the dilated eye. Well, they drop the eye. You know, if you've ever had that done, that's crazy. Every light feels like it's piercing you. He says, no. Well, hey, don't worry. I've done 8 of these today. Nice job he's got. So I said, well, what? He says, yeah, we'll numb your eye, and we'll give you the injection, and this medicine will get the swelling down because this is serious. We need to take care of this. Wow. Okay. And this is about a year ago. So, yeah. Flash forward almost 14 months. I've had 5 of these. 5 shots in the eye. And believe me, I know it sounds terrible. It sounds incredible because our eyes are very, you know, I mean, we have the blinking reflex. Anytime you touch your eye, I don't wear glasses. I wear glasses to see far now. And I probably could use contact lenses, but our eyes are weird. We always blink, and I don't know how people put contacts in to keep your eye open like that. So to get this shot, he's going to have to numb my eye. Well, you know, how do you numb your eye? He said, we're going to put some drops in there. Okay, now, think about this. When you get some Novocaine in your gums for when you get to see your tooth worked on, you know, the doctor gives you a shot. And you can feel the Novocaine working. You feel the numbness in your gum. You also feel some numbness maybe in your cheek. And if it's not numbing, the dentist will take a little needle and say, can you feel that? Can you feel that? And you go, oh, yeah, I feel that. Oh, I'll give you a little more Novocaine. So make sure that you are properly filled with the painkiller so you're numbed up so you don't feel the pain of whatever they're going to do to you. Well, riddle me this, Batman. How do you test if the eye is numb? The only way you're going to know if the eye isn't numb is if when the needle hits it, you jump out of the chair. That's how you know that your eye is not numb. And as I said, all he's doing is dropping two little drops in my eye, and that's supposed to numb my eye. Well, what if my eye doesn't take to those drops? There's no way of knowing. And at least when the dentist gives you the Novocaine shot, it's a shot. It's a needle. You see it. You feel it. You know, it's there. It's metal. It's got some heft. This little guy comes with a little eyedropper. Boop, boop. That's going to keep the pain away from this needle in my eyeball? I hope it does. So I'm sitting there, close your eye for 15 minutes, okay, and I'm sitting there going, I'm not even worried about the needle itself. I'm worried about, is my eye numbed? I have to say, they do it. I mean, it's a weird experience, and I think they do it on purpose. It's very quick. The doctor isn't in there, and then when it's time, he and his assistant burst in through the door. Okay, let's go. Thing around your eye. They put the eye thing to keep your eye open, like from Clockwork Orange. Your eyes are wide open. Boom, boom. Okay, look to the left. Look to the left. Okay, you're going to feel a little pressure, and we're done. I think they do that just so you don't even think about it, because the thought of this is strange. And I have to say, I know it sounds horrendous to get a shot in the eye, and I thought the same thing. And it's not the most pleasing thing, but it's not crazy. It sounds so much worse than it is. And the sad part of my reality now is I'm used to getting shots in my eye. How sad is that? Here's a guy, always healthy, no problems, and now a part of my life, hopefully this clears up, but as it has been for the last year, a regular part of my life now is I get shots in my eye. But that's not even the story. The story is, what he has said to me is, a byproduct of this. And you never feel it. I don't feel it. When I get the shot, you would never know I even got the shot. You would never know I had a problem. My eye doesn't, visually, my eye never shows anything. It's all internal. And when I got the shot, my eye would be a little bloodshot maybe for, a few hours, and then it would just go away. But he did say, a byproduct of this, when I do give you the shot, I may clip a blood vessel in your eye. And it's no big deal. It will bleed. It will bleed into your eye. You're not going to feel it. There's nothing wrong about it. That's a possible byproduct. I mean, I'm giving you a shot in the eye. There's blood vessels everywhere. But it's going to look really bad for a couple of days, for a week or so, because the blood is going to leak out and it's going to cover the white of your eye. And as I said, I've had five of these. He never clipped the vessel. So it was like, okay, whatever, you know? Well, I had one done last week. I go home, I look in my eye, and I just see the red filling up in the white of my eye. And I'm like, he must have clipped. And it was dark red toward the bottom. I put my eyelid down. And I'm like, he must have clipped the blood vessel. So over the course of 3 or 4 days, it must have continued to bleed. And it was funny to watch the blood travel around the eye. It started on the right side, and then it slowly crept around my pupil and went to the other side. And in fact, I came in here last week, and Mike, the producer for the podcast here, I was wearing glasses, like sunglasses, so people wouldn't see it because it really looked odd and scary. And so I didn't want anybody to be afraid. I didn't want people to think I was either, you know, auditioning for a zombie movie or, and Google this and you'll see what I mean. There used to be some Dracula movies by an actor called Christopher Lee. Christopher Lee was in Lord of the Rings. He was in Star Wars. He did some Dracula movies, some really bad B-movie Dracula movies in the late 60s, early 70s. Google Christopher Lee Dracula and images of Christopher Lee as Dracula. Google that and you will see, I'm sure pictures will show up when he would be ready to bite someone. His eyes were all red and that's what my eye looked like. And so last week I had my sunglasses on so I wouldn't scare people. And but then you forget because I can't see it. Everything looks normal to me, and it's not in pain, so I don't know that it, I forget what it looks like. So last week, I had my sunglasses on here, and I was talking to Mike, the producer, and I took my glasses off, and he looked at me and went, "Huh? Ah! What happened to your eye?" And I was reminded then, oh, my gosh, okay, let me put my glasses back on so I don't scare everybody. And I had to do that all week because I had forgotten. So I went to the grocery store or whatever. And every time if I was with somebody for an extended period of time, especially indoors, I didn't want to keep my sunglasses on like I'm Ray Charles or something. So I would take them off and, oh, what happened to your eye? And then it became, you know, a 25-minute explanation. And so, of course, here's the best part of the story. If this hasn't been enough, I get this done last Tuesday. So I told you I'm in this play. Not only do I have to dye my hair for this play is really becoming quite a thing in my life here. Not only did I have to dye my hair and change my look for that. So now, of course, they're going to take some publicity photos for the play, for posters and, you know, social media, whatever, right? And they've had this date planned for 2 weeks. It's going to be on Friday, June 3rd, 10 a.m. Thank you very much. Okay. Okay, well, when I've gotten this shot in the past, and nothing, you know, he's never clipped the blood vessel, so it's never been a big deal. So, of course, Elton Jim has to, you know, the misadventures of Elton Jim, what happens? I've got this blood red eye. And now I've got to go and take pictures. So I show up to the photo shoot and I've got my glasses on. And I haven't seen these people in a month and a half since I got the role. And they're like, "Hey, how you doing? Oh, you know, you dyed your hair back. Yeah, okay, great." And then I pull the glasses off and the director is a woman. She goes, "Oh, what happened to your eye?" And I'm like, "Okay. Does your photographer have Photoshop?" Because so we're taking a series of photos, and so they were able to Photoshop it out. But while we're taking the photos, I could already tell that they're saying to me, "Why don't you move your head to the right?" So the bad eye. So all my pictures, most of the pictures of this photo shoot are all kind of profiled or tilted. So my Christopher Lee Dracula eye, my zombie eye, is off to the side and then not completely visible. However, actually the pictures that they did use for the poster is a look shot on, and they did color it in. But once again, I said to myself, here's, for the last year, I've gotten these shots. He never had a problem clipping the blood vessel. The one time that I need clear eyes after taking the shot, and of course, he clips the blood vessel, and I look like Dracula. Hey. And it's Elton Jim Toronto here at Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic at WGN Plus. Thanks for clicking on. Oh, it's by the way, this show, of course, is from the end of the web to your screen. And if you're an Elton John fan, you'll get the reference. Actually, it's kind of appropriate. It was right around this time in 1975 that the album Captain Fantastic, which is the takeoff for the Captain Podtastic, Elton John album, Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy, came out. And it was the first album in history to enter the charts at number one. And that's a pretty good it's a pretty good accomplishment. And of course, after that, Elton did it again 6 months later. He became the second person in history to do it with another album. That's how popular he was back in 1975. But speaking of pop culture, we once again go to the pop culture nook and welcome Mick Kaler. Are you there, Mick?
I'm here, buddy.
How you doing, sir?
Doing very well. I remember when Captain Fantastic came out and Someone Saved My Life Tonight was the big song on the radio, and it was a huge deal.
Oh,
it was a massive deal.
I mean, that was, in fact, it's my favorite Elton John album. Doesn't have major, I mean, obviously Someone Saved My Life Tonight, but it's not like it's filled with the big hits. They didn't really release many singles except for that one from that album. But it's autobiographical. It came with a poster. It is an amazing cover. It came with a lyric book with pictures. It came with a little scrapbook of all these clippings of Elton's early career. It came with a flyer to join the Elton John fan club.
Yeah, it was such a big deal. Like you said, that whole packaging. And if you think about it, Jim, especially that being autobiographical, you could make a stage show just on that album.
Well, you know what's interesting, and I don't know if you even know this, but they were planning in 1975, because the album was such a hit, and as I said, it was number one right out of the box. It never happened before. No one had ever done that, an album entering the charts at one. Not the Beatles, not Elvis, not Frank Sinatra. Not Al Jolson. No one. And they were going, and they already had a kind of a demo done. They were going to make a Saturday morning cartoon.
Oh, wow.
Of Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy and the same artist, Alan Aldridge, who did the cover, and it was all illustrated. He was doing the artwork, and the whole story was about how Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy have to go to music, you know, they have to make their way to Music World or something to become, the rock stars. And
yeah,
there were to be these adventures and all these monsters and all these obstacles to get to Music Town to become rock stars. And they had all the illustrations done. They actually had gotten some, as I said, some early demos. And then, unfortunately, in 1976, I don't say unfortunately in a bad way, but in terms of this project, in 1976, Elton John admitted in Rolling Stone that he was bisexual.
And that shot everything down.
And in the United States, especially in 1976, to be homosexual or bisexual or anything, folks, you don't know what it was like. It was a whole different world, and it wasn't that long ago, but it was a whole different world. And
And
his popularity in America really shot down very quickly. And the project was produced by Dick Clark.
Okay.
Well, you know, Dick Clark from Dick Clark's Rockin' the Even Bandstand, you know, and all those game shows and all that stuff. Well, you know, he was very, you know, very mainstream,
right,
America.
Definitely.
So when this bisexual admission became big news, Dick Clark head for Z Hills.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And
I don't have anything to do with that Elton John thing. You kidding me?
Yeah, and the project died, and it's such a shame, because I've actually spoken with the artist Alan Aldridge, and he was so excited.
I'll bet.
And he had all this stuff done, and it died. But we shouldn't be talking pop culture yet. I haven't played the theme.
Let's hit it, please.
There you go. Now we can officially start to talk about pop culture, because this is the Pop Culture Club. And do you get, Mick, We've been doing this now for a while. Do you get the joke?
I have finally grasped it. I went to a think tank in Washington this week.
It's pop culture. We're talking
and
about pop.
Help me with this.
We're talking about pop culture, but then this, but we're doing it is in kind of our own little group here. So we're like a club. So it's a pop culture club, and of course, this is
culture club.
Culture Club. Very good, Mick. And you are the charter member.
That's right. We're in our little treehouse.
Yes. Although, as I said many times, Dean Richards is also part of the club. He wanted to be a part of the club. And he's a Hall of Famer.
Anytime.
You know, I know he's a Hall of Famer for television. I know he's a Walk of Famer here at WGN. But I think Dean's greatest achievement is being a charter member of the Pop Culture Club. I think he would admit that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now we can officially talk about pop culture since we're in the club. We have to come up with a handshake.
Yeah, that's right.
We need a handshake.
We pay dues.
We need a handshake. There are dues. I mean, do you remember the movie The Sting?
Yeah.
Where to let all the con men that were involved in the con and the sting, so they knew like who they were or everything was okay, they would take their index finger and they would rub it against the side of their nose.
Right, they flick their nose a little.
Yeah, and that was kind of the sign like, okay, hi, or yes, everything's going well. So maybe we could just do the sting thing.
Okay, got it.
If you're walking down the street and someone takes their index finger and flicks the tip of their nose, you know they're in the pop culture club.
They're one of us.
Yes. So anyway, I wanted to talk about a couple of topics this week because there are a few things brewing. Mm-hmm. One big thing, which I don't think anyone expected, the controversy to be swirling around this, but there certainly is some controversy swirling around the new Ghostbusters movie. And I don't think anybody expected this. I mean, about a year or so ago, it was announced that an all-female cast was going to be there with Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig and all females. And was it Paul Feig who did Bridesmaids?
Yeah.
Was going to direct it, and so everybody was excited. Of course, we are in the midst, at least in the entertainment world, to a great extent, of a very big female empowerment movement. You see a lot more women on television, hosting television shows. You see a lot more movies with women in starring roles. I know it's not where it should be yet. I'm just saying that there's certainly been a big influx, and there's
progress.
You know, Amy Schumer and people like that. So obviously this made a lot of sense on paper. But apparently, there's been a lot of backlash.
There has been, ever since the movie trailer came out, which was, actually there's been two movie trailers, and the first one came out several months ago. And it wasn't received well.
Yeah. Well, apparently, not only was it not received well, but from what I've read, too, is that apparently there was some like male-oriented internet group that took great offense that the Ghostbusters would be replaced by as women as opposed to men.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually gained some traction.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's surprising that in 2016 that would gain traction, but apparently there are some people that they don't, you know, they ain't afraid of no ghosts, but I guess they're afraid of women Ghostbusters.
Right. Well, the problem I have, Jim, and I'd seen some posts on YouTube with that first trailer just saying this movie, I don't know if this is going to be good or not, but I didn't see a lot of the female bashing thing, but who brought credence to the whole deal was Melissa McCarthy by calling these people out.
Yeah, I don't understand it. You know, it's so funny. The first rule that you learn about criticism is you don't acknowledge it.
Yeah.
If you don't acknowledge it, most people won't know it exists.
Yeah, she woke everybody up to this whole thing, and when she started whining about, you know,
the haters,
oh, it's about women can't do this and all that kind of thing, the first thought that came to my mind is, no, I saw the trailer. It looks really kind of silly and dumb and not in a good way. And the other part is, Jim, let's be honest. Ghostbusters 2 was a piece of garbage.
You know, it's so funny. Well, you know, and not even Ghostbusters 2. Let's be real honest. You know, I would say about half of the movie, the original,
yeah,
is good.
Right.
But when those...
The first half is very funny.
Yeah, the first half is very funny. And then when the special effects and the real ghosts and remember those two lions, come alive.
Something came up, yeah.
And the building starts to get haunted and, you know, Sigourney Weaver is possessed and...
She's levitating.
Yeah, and, Rick Moranis is, and then, of course, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, which I'll be honest with you, I don't know if Stay Puft is big on the East Coast or on the West Coast, but when they were saying, there was such a buildup in the movie as to, oh my God, look what it is. And I was expecting, and when they said the Stay Puft, I didn't even know who he was.
Right. I didn't either. I thought maybe, do something like Captain Crunch. Okay?
Or the Pillsbury Doughboy or somebody. But I didn't even know who the Stay Puft guy was. Maybe he's popular somewhere else, but I don't think he was very popular in Chicago. I was very disappointed in that. But in all honesty, Ghostbusters itself is not a great movie. Now, it became a phenomenon in that summer, that Ray Parker Jr. song that I was playing.
1984.
Underneath.
Yeah, there was the song, there was the logo.
Oh, the logo. And then here's the best part, too. They're claiming that the new movie is a complete reboot. Right? The story itself may not even mirror the original as to how they got together and the whole thing. Well, if that's the case, okay, you've got an all-female cast, fine. You're reimagining the whole Ghostbuster story, giving it a whole new origin. Then you can't use the Ghostbuster emblem from the first one.
Exactly. And you can't call it Ghostbusters.
No, because now, but of course, if you're going to make a multi-million-dollar movie out of it, you have to call it Ghostbusters.
Yeah, and you have some people in there, right.
Yeah, and you have to use the logo because that logo itself has become a pop icon.
Right. So anyway, getting back to the first movie, like you said, and I agree, about two-thirds of the way of the movie, and that's when all the effects came in and it kind of faded out. And then, of course, like I said, the second movie was garbage.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that when people saw the trailer, I didn't even pay attention to the women. I was like, okay, the first one was okay. Second one was crap. Why are they even trying to make a third, whether it's with women, men, or monkeys? Why even bother?
Well, this, I'll tell you, what I found interesting is that, this movie, let's not forget, not only did it become a phenomenon as a film, when it came out, and then with its sequel, even though the sequel didn't do, it wasn't as good, but I think it did make a ton of money just because of playing off of the popularity of the first one. But then don't forget the aftermarket of the toys.
Exactly.
There's a whole generation of people in their 30s who grew up with the Ghostbuster cartoon and the toys that were based on the cartoon.
The action figure. Goblins and things.
I've got a godson. He's 30 years old, and he was, 2 or 3 years old when Ghostbusters came out, because that cartoon was on for several years.
Mm-hmm.
So he was even probably a little older than that, and I will never forget at Christmas I bought him for Christmas, and he was probably 3 or 4. I bought him the Ghostbusters. Like fire station, because remember they were in a fire station.
Yeah, their headquarters.
Yeah, so in the cartoon, so this toy was like the toy. This was the Cabbage Patch toy of that year. This little guy, comes in the giant box. When he tore the first piece of the wrapping off, he started shaking. And screaming, oh, my God, oh, Ghostbuster, Ghostbuster Firehouse, Ghostbuster Firehouse, that everybody in the room were like, oh, my God. I mean, I felt bad because, he's not related to me through blood. He's a friend of mine's son.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt bad because it was the last present he opened. And he loved this present so much that everyone else in their family looked at me like, well, where did this guy come from?
Yeah, you stole our thunder.
Yeah, well, how come our grandson or how come our nephew is going crazy over your present? But he was literally shaking. So I can understand from a marketing standpoint why they are playing into the original with the logo, because there is a whole generation who grew up with Ghostbusters. But I'm just looking at this, and this is what I think is going to be interesting. If you don't like the movie when it comes out, just as you were saying, you saw the trailer.
Right.
What I fear is, if you don't like the movie, that you're going to be criticized as being anti-woman or anti-funny women because you don't like the female Ghostbusters. It might just be a bad movie, but I'm because I read the story that there's some feminist group out there that is basically saying every woman needs to go see the Ghostbusters movie to make sure it's a huge hit. So
yeah,
that
they've been given a directive, a kind of a marching order,
like a political rallying cry that all women have to go see this to make sure it's a hit, so that Hollywood will not be afraid to give women starring roles because this is such a high profile project. That if it doesn't do gangbusters or Ghostbusters, then it's going to say, well, you know what? Women can't open a film. And
well, look at the other side of it, though, too, okay? If it bombs, Melissa McCarthy and the rest of the crew, Kristen Wiig and all them that are in the movie, they may turn it the other way and say, we were just shut out because there's a lot of women haters out there.
Well, that's my point. So I think that if you don't like it and you're a man, you're going to be accused of being, you know, a misogynist.
Yeah.
Or believing what Jerry Lewis has said many times, that women aren't funny. And maybe no. Maybe it's just a bad movie. And I don't know.
Exactly.
I haven't seen it, so I'm not going to make any judgments. But I've watched and I've been around movies enough to somewhat understand when a studio is afraid about a release that's coming up. And I'm just looking at subtle hints. First of all, I saw something on the internet the other day that said the studio is saying this is not a chick flick.
Right.
So they're already worried that it's going to be viewed as a chick flick.
Trying to just get the girls in. They
just the girls that, you know, don't, hey guys, this is Ghostbusters. You like this. This is not just a chick flick. And what I've also found interesting is in the last week, both Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray, Bill Murray just, I guess, the other day, have come out at press conferences and saying how great this movie is and how much they endorse it. And there's obviously the two living Ghostbusters. I mean, there's Ernie Hudson still around, but, you know, Harold Ramis obviously passed away a few years ago. So you've got the two main Ghostbusters who are giving their seal of approval. And it seems to me that for them to come out and do that, there must be a little fear. Because if you want this movie to live on its own, I would think you stand clear of them.
Well, here's the other thing. The other night they were all on Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, really? Who was?
The original Murray and Aykroyd showed up, and so did Ernie Hudson. And then they had the girls on, and they all did like a dance off on Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know. So, I mean, that's what I mean.
So they're really pressing it.
Yeah,
really
it are. Seems to me that that's a drastic move.
Yeah.
When you start to, you know, to the need to bring those old folks in, because, you know, to me, first of all, it's a conflict of interest. Not only were Aykroyd and Murray in the first movie, that's fine. I'll give them that. But Aykroyd wrote it, and Murray gets a piece of the action.
Yeah.
In terms of, he got points. He gets points on Ghostbuster stuff. In fact, I know from a friend who knows Bill, he's made more money off of the Ghostbusters toys.
Okay.
Than you even could imagine.
I'm sure.
So not even the movie. So these guys have certainly, some kind of a stake in this movie doing well. So to me, it almost sounds like there's a conflict here. I know they're Ghostbusters, but they also have a financial gain if this does well. So it's going to be very interesting. As I said, the first one wasn't great in my view. I remember I liked it. I didn't love it.
Yeah, so, well, something I went back and saw like three times.
Yeah,
like that.
So this is going to be interesting. Do you think you're going to go see it?
No, I think I'm going to pass because they actually made a second.
Oh, Mick, you just don't think women are funny.
No, it's not that. I know I'm being a hater, aren't I, Jim? I should stop hating. No, they actually made a second trailer. In fact, I saw it a couple days ago, and I was like, it looks like the first one, but they said this is a new trailer, and it's kind of the same thing.
Well, and here's two. You have to remember, 1984, once again, when the first one came out, special effects in movies were just beginning.
They're in their infancy as well.
Yeah, there was obviously Star Wars, but there was a huge leap. And so Ghostbusters was one of those where there was a huge leap in the effects of a movie, and so that dazzled people.
Sure.
In the midst of the comedy, there was all these high tech things, and let's be honest, you know, I remember when I watched the original, and I've seen the original since then. Obviously, it came out 30 years ago. You know, when that green monster comes out.
Yeah, the one that slimes everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty hokey.
Right.
It's pretty dated. Now, I don't know what they're going to do. They have to do sliming, obviously.
Yeah, they actually show that in the trailer.
Yeah,
too.
But I wonder, they still have that same kind of goblin-looking guy, or did you see him?
It was kind of hard to tell just because of the effects they had in there.
Yeah.
But then they've got the one woman who plays a mousy librarian. I think she actually becomes one of the ones that joins the Ghostbusters. So
oh, okay.
There's this whole tie-in with that. But again, getting back to my original point about calling out these so-called haters, you know, my favorite quote was from Melissa McCarthy, and I don't mean to beat up on her, but this was funny because she kept saying the internet and the social media is a fake world, you know, so there's all these fake people and stuff. And then I'm like, then why are you even acknowledging?
Yeah, once again, don't acknowledge. The way that you get rid of that is you don't acknowledge it exists. It's the first rule of public relations. Do not. When someone says something bad about you, the first rule when you're media training somebody is to tell them, do not even repeat that negative sentence in your answer.
Bingo.
So, for instance, the one of the most famous of those was Richard Nixon. At one of his press conferences during Watergate, a reporter said, Mr. President, are you a crook? And his famous quote was, I am not a crook.
Yeah.
That's how you know Nixon. He by saying I am not a crook, he put crook in the headline.
Yep.
With his name. What you're supposed to say is, I'm the president of the United States and I didn't break the law. But he said I am not a crook. That hung on him, and the term crook and Nixon were now in the same headline. First rule.
Well, and again, back to the Ghostbusters movie, I think the first weekend, because of curiosity, you know, and part of this, you know, women's push, I think it's going to do well that first week. And then after that, people are going to go, I don't know about
that. Oh, yeah, I think first week, obviously, will. It's going to be the question will
open big.
Yeah, the question will be if it has legs, if it continues.
Yeah.
One last thing before we close the door on this Pop Culture Club. I just want to say something very quick. Within the last week or so, Muhammad Ali passed away, and everybody's been talking about his boxing career. Everybody's been talking about his political career, which was very controversial when he decided to not go to the draft in the Vietnam War. His religion when he converted to Islam. A lot of controversy about Ali. You can debate whether he was the greatest boxer of all time. That's debatable. But what few people haven't mentioned is, and it's very fitting in our little club here today, Mick, is that people, this guy was not just a famous boxer. This guy was a huge pop culture icon.
Oh,
And he changed the way athletes are viewed. You know, people see now, you know, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, you know, all these guys are, you know, Michael Strahan on Good Morning America or with Kelly Ripa. You automatically, you don't think of it as a big deal, as an athlete making a transition into being, you know, a TV host or something like that. That was unheard of.
Well, back in the day.
Back in the 60s and 70s.
The athlete never had much to say, you know, about a game or a match.
Yeah, they were very, well, they were, first of all, they weren't articulate.
Right, and Ali was the one that was like, he was a personality. It's like, whoa, even when he's not boxing, this guy's really interesting.
I mean, Muhammad Ali had a comic book. It was Muhammad Ali versus Superman.
I remember that.
He had a Saturday morning cartoon in 1977, The Adventures of Ali, and he was like, he was in space.
Yeah.
He was always a guest on TV shows. He was guest on game shows, on those Dean Martin roasts. He and Howard Cosell, who was the big broadcaster of the time, actually helped make each other's careers by their repartee and their banter. I mean, this guy was literally the biggest and most well-known, not just sports figure, but celebrity or perhaps person in the world.
Well, the great story that the writer Bob Green talked about is the time that he was traveling with Ali, and they were flying in a plane, and they were getting ready to land somewhere. They were still hovering in the sky, and Ali looked down, and he pointed at all the houses below them, and he looked at Bob Green, and he said, "You see all those houses?" And Bob Green says, "Yeah." He says, "I could go to any one of those doors of those houses, and they'd know who I am, and I bet you they'd let me in, too."
Right.
And you know what? He was right.
Yeah, I mean, you cannot. I mean, I would urge anybody who didn't, and we grew up with him during his heyday, and he came back and won the championship three times after having lost it. I mean, certainly his boxing prowess can be debated. Everybody compares him to Rocky Marciano. I know my dad certainly did. Mm-hmm. but I'm talking about him as a pop culture figure and a pop culture icon. His influence also must be recognized because he did change the way a pro athlete was viewed. He changed the prominence of a pro athlete, and he made the entire sport, not just boxing, but sports, really take a huge leap. Pay-per-view. There wouldn't have, all his fights were pay-per-view fights, many of them.
Yeah, and you could take it a step further and just show how media jumped to that, and then it's like, okay, let's find someone else, whether it's an athlete or maybe just a singer, an actor, whatever. Who else has that kind of charisma? We got to gravitate towards those kind of people.
Yeah, no, so he will be missed, and the world is – and what's sad is to think of if Parkinson's hadn't taken him, what the last 30 years would have been? Would there have been a George Foreman grill or a Muhammad Ali grill? That's what I want to know. Thanks for taking time in the Pop Culture Club, Mick.
Always a pleasure, pal.
Great. And I want to thank you for listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Please click in every Monday and be a new one. And don't forget, it's Captain Podtastic from the end of the web to your screen.